Hey folks, Tony and I are really excited to continue our partnership with Ruiz Auto Services, All American Used Cars and Trucks. We got some great new specials here for Ruiz Auto, located at just south of 90th and Fort here in Omaha, 4839 North 90th Street. Just talked to Esmeralda the other night, and here's what we got for the next couple of months here. Saturdays, if you are looking for a free inspection and check on your air conditioning, all you have to do is say a pen and a napkin sent you in, and the crew at Ruiz Auto Services and Exhaust will check your air conditioning. They will inspect it, and it will be for free. Also, on Saturdays, while you're there, you need an oil change, right? Just it's a Saturday ritual, especially in the summertime. Go in and get your oil change. If you mention a pen and a napkin, it'll be $50 for your oil change, start to finish there at Ruiz. If you're in the market for a new set of tires, mention a pen and a napkin here over the next month or two, and the crew at Ruiz will give you a free mounting and balancing on your new set of four tires. That's a great deal, because that's probably, gosh, that's got to be a good $100 at least for the mounting and the balancing on the new tires. Just mention a pen and a napkin, and they're going to give that to you. So Ruiz Auto Services and Exhaust, All American Used Cars and Trucks, Esmeralda and Juan Carlos have been terrific to a pen and a napkin. They want to be terrific for you as well. They do great work, and I think you should check them out. So please go check out Ruiz Auto Services and Exhaust. If you're in the market for a used car, All American Used Cars and Trucks. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. My name is Marty Plum, and I am your host of a Pen and a Napkin podcast, a weekly coaching clinic you can carry around with you in your pocket. Welcome back to the coaching staff, episode number 136. And I realize the last couple of episodes I have failed to mention our sponsor, Ruiz Auto Services and Exhaust, All American Used Cars and Trucks. You got the commercial on there. Go check that out. They've got a couple of great deals for you to check out at Ruiz. So check them out. You're checking us out. We're excited to be on here. It's Sunday afternoon. I've got all 10 fingers and all 10 toes after the weekend. Tony, how about you?
I counted them on Saturday morning. Still there.
Still there. Very good. Did you light anything off?
I did not. We've kind of developed a little tradition where we go to the Colonels game here in town. And so I steer clear of it, because I would be one of those people who would do something dumb and end up with, you know, six fingers and four toes or whatever. So yeah. I just think it's best to let the professionals do it.
Is the Colonels, are they single A?
Single A. Yeah, they were playing the River Bandits, which I think is the Kansas City Royals affiliate. And I don't think, I think those two finished first and second in the first half of the race. And so it was good. River Bandits had a good pitcher on the mound. He had 95-mile-an-hour fastball. Colonels took him deep, ended up getting, I think it was a 6-3 win. So the good guys won.
Oh, okay. Well, speaking of winning and losing here, Tony, a little basketball history to start off the pod. 1952 NBA Championship Series. Tony, who you got?
Oh, not quite. I don't think I'm ready for the Celtics dynasty yet. So let's run with the Knicks.
The Knicks lost in the championship series to the Minneapolis Lakers and our guy, George Mikan. Yes, 4-3. The Knicks lost. This was a couple of interesting facts. The NBA widened the lane for the first. A lot of people think that the lane was widened because of Wilt, and that is true. But before it was widened even further for Wilt, they widened it for Mikan, and so they the lane was widened as a result of George Mikan's dominance. Slater Martin was the point guard of the Minneapolis Lakers, and Vern Mikkelsen, the first modern power forward, also played for the Minneapolis Lakers. So they had the big three back then, Tony.
Before LeBron and the Heat?
Before LeBron and the Heat. Just a smidge. There were a couple of other big threes before that as well, or in between the two. So, and then I thought it was interesting. I started taking a look at the teams that were in the NBA in 1952, Tony. Another fun fact about your NBA champions, the Minneapolis Lakers, they were the furthest team geographically west in the NBA in 1952. I got to find the teams here. Rochester. Oh, here it is. Sorry. Syracuse, Boston, New York, Philadelphia, Baltimore. That was the Eastern Division. Western Division, Rochester, Minneapolis, Indianapolis, Fort Wayne, and Milwaukee. So, kind of crazy to think the way that we have sports travel today. Nothing south. I think the probably, well, let's see here. Either Indianapolis or Baltimore would be the southernmost team, and the westernmost team is Minneapolis for sure. So just some weird, wild stuff for you there, Tony.
That is some weird, wild, wacky geography. Now, I'm assuming Fort Wayne wasn't the Mad Ants back then.
They were the Pistons. They were the Pistons. It was their 11th season as a franchise at this point. The Syracuse Nationals was their third year in the NBA. Just doing some Wikipedia. The Indianapolis Olympians, their third season. Obviously, they moved on to something else. The Milwaukee Hawks, I think, became the St. Louis Hawks, which then became the Atlanta Hawks. So,
who have upgraded their roster quite a bit over the past few weeks.
They've done all right. We'll get into that in our TWIB segment. The NCAA champions in 1952. Want to take a guess there, Tony?
Last time I guessed Texas Western, and it ended up being Kentucky. So I'm going to go back with Texas Western.
No. It's not. Here's a, well, give it away. Rock Chalk Jayhawk KU.
Now, was Name Smith the coach then?
Fog Allen was the coach.
Ooh, it's named after him, the Marine.
Yes. Have you ever been in there?
Not.
It is really cool. Michael went, we went on a campus visit with him, and when he was a junior, and of course they end up the campus tour at Fog Allen, and obviously basketball nerd family. So it was awesome. It was really, really cool. So the best player on Kansas was a guy named Clyde Levett, a future Hall of Famer. He had 33-17 in the championship game. Kansas beat St. John's 80-63. Championship game was played in Seattle, of all places, University of Washington. And yes, the backup guard for the Jayhawks was a guy by the name of Dean Smith, who went on to do some things.
Mm-hmm.
So,
I'll be the best coach in North Carolina basketball history.
Probably have to agree with you there. As much as I appreciate and enjoy the greatness of former A Pen and a Napkin guest Roy Williams, I have to agree with you. Dean Smith is probably the best coach that has ever roamed the sidelines in Tar Heel land.
Roy would probably agree with us too.
Yes, yes. So there's your basketball history, folks. We are going to jump into episode 136. Tony and I are going to talk about creating energy in your program. You know, you're going to be in situations at some point. You're going to maybe take over a program. One of the things my buddy Meyer told me, good coaches very rarely leave good programs. And when things are rolling, usually you're going to take over a situation where things are a bit of a struggle, or there's some dysfunction, or whatever it may be. Most coaches are going to take over situations where the program is not in good shape. Talent isn't great, the enthusiasm around it. And what Tony and I want to talk about this week is creating energy within your program, getting your players, getting your community, getting your parents excited about the program. How do you do that? It's one of the most difficult things that you can do, Tony. You have to have, you just can't come in and wing it, nor can you just be having blinders on where you just say it's going to be all about skill work. It's all going to be all about this. there's a lot of different things that go into putting a program back on the map in the way that you want it to be there, getting it going in the right direction. And it's a step-by-step process. It's not just as simple as let's get great players and let's let them play. There's a lot that goes into it, right, buddy?
Yeah, it's one of those things, if you fail to plan, you're planning to fail. And so you've got to make sure that you have a plan in place because, like you said, most of the jobs, not all the jobs, but most of the jobs are what we would probably describe as fixer-uppers. And so you're going to have to make sure you have a step-by-step plan to get the momentum headed in the right direction, because it's once you get it going, it's pretty good to sit back and let it roll, but it takes a lot of work to get it.
Mm-hmm. So Tony, you know, Walnut Ridge, Hudson, even the Wheelers, I can't remember for sure where the Wheelers were at when you took over there. And then, you know, Harlan was obviously a pretty well-established program when you went there, but more often than not, you've taken over some programs that have needed a facelift, some pick-me-ups here. So what's kind of the first thing that you thought about when you stepped into your new position and what you needed to do to get that energy going in a positive way?
You know, I think the first thing you have to do is, what do you want your program to be about? And it has to be more than just basketball. You know, you have to decide that. So what's going to be your why, both as a team and as a coach? I think you have to establish those foundational core values, if you will. And so you've got to figure out, are you going to be a team that, you know, is disciplined? Are you going to be kind of more of a playground team, so to speak? Are you going to be a team that has each other's back, or are you going to emphasize the individual? And again, I think if you emphasize the individual, that's a long road. That's not an easy road. You want to play for something, have them play for something bigger than themselves. And one of the things I think that does that is where you play for that person beside you, that person next to you, if you will. And then you've got to display some toughness and grit. And I think if you can get those foundational pieces in place, what will happen is the community will fall for that, if you will, and they'll be out there and they'll support you.
Mm-hmm. It's in short, you could kind of take that all and put it together, Tony. Would it be accurate, I should say, to kind of summarize it into one sentence? What's your identity going to be? Is that what you're kind of thinking of there?
Yeah, most definitely. You know, your identity as a team and your identity as a coach, you have to have those things established so that when it hits the fan, and it's going to hit the fan, you're going to have different moments when it's going to hit the fan. And you have to make sure that you have a plan in place of where you're going to go back and what you can refer to.
Multiple coaches have said it, but let's give credit. I don't know. Let's give credit to Don Meyer, just because he's Don Meyer. Mm-hmm. Coach Meyer always used to say, I knew a good coach when I walked into the gym and within 15 to 20 minutes, I knew exactly what the identity of the program and what the team was. And oftentimes when you're taking over a situation that is struggling, where you're trying to create energy within the program, there's a lot of things wrong. So you're trying, sometimes you get caught up in trying to do everything on the menu and trying to fix everything at once instead of, okay, this has to be the first thing. And whatever that is, and in your case, Tony, you're talking about the identity and who we are, that's what we need to start with, because not everything can be fixed all at once. We've got to start somewhere, and we've got to make sure that's good. Point A has got to be good before we move on to point B. But I think that's, if you're a coach listening to this and you're taking over a program who is that has been struggling with their energy level, people getting excited about it, I think this is a great, great topic, a great point to start off with. You've got to know what you're standing for. You've got to be able to point for something and say, hey, things aren't great right now, but we're going to be this. And that's a building point that you can start with the quote unquote selling of your program to everybody else that you want to get involved with it.
Yeah, I mean, I like a lot of analogies, and it's like you buy a house that's a fixer-upper. you're not going to go start on the roof first. You're going to start in the foundation, in the basement, if you will. And that's kind of this thing, is you've got to establish those things right out of the gate, that are your foundational pieces, that eventually you're going to put some walls up and some, you know, ceiling and different things like that, so that you're ready to go. But early on, you've got to get things smoothed out, if you will. And okay, now I can see what the identity is. I can see where we're headed. We have conflict. We have these points that we have issues that come up. We can always go back to, this is what we're about.
Mm-hmm. Youth sports today has become a billion-dollar industry nationwide, and grassroots basketball has been at the epicenter of this explosion. These days, players, parents, and handlers chase the almighty scholarship, NIL deals, and branding creation. However, there is still one place where basketball coaches and players come to develop their games without the fanfare and adulation of recruiting gurus, next-level evaluations, and social media highlight reels. It's not a basketball camp. It's a basketball school. Snow Valley Basketball School started as the brainchild of Herb Livesey, who, as a young adult, was inspired by the great Bob Cousy to start his own basketball camp. Starting in 1961 at Snow Valley Ski Resort, east of Los Angeles, before moving to Westmont College in Santa Barbara, Livesey's school was a place for the game's greatest coaches to teach the game throughout the 1970s and 80s. Two Iowans, Don Showalter and Jerry Slykus, adopted Livesey's curriculum, bringing the school to Wartburg College in Waverly, Iowa in 1994. This summer will be a celebration of its 30th anniversary of Snow Valley in the Hawkeye State. Here, over 1,400 campers will start each day before dawn and end after the sun goes down. Snow Valley Basketball School is America's longest continuously running basketball camp. It's where players come to learn and coaches come to teach. For those that come there every summer, it is the home to the last of the Cowboys. The Last of the Cowboys, the story of Snow Valley Basketball School, will be available on Amazon on July 1st, 2025. Paperback copies will be available for $17.99, while Kindle copies will be available for pre-order for $9.99. Get to know the story of America's longest continuous basketball camp. Tony, my first big one that I've got here is you. The head coach, your demeanor, how you present yourself, what type of energy are you going to bring to a situation? It's going to be a discouraging process. It's going to be a lot more of a struggle before it gets to where you want it to go. And so I think one of the first things that you do when you're trying to create energy in the program is how you present yourself in the community. What's your posture like? What is your body language like? How are you going to have people look at you? You are the face, the CEO of the program. Hoops 365, a one-year guide to becoming a basketball CEO, due out early this fall. Shameless plug. But there's a lot of truth to that, in my opinion, where people are going to look to you and how are you reacting to failure? Your players are going to look at the first time you go, let's say you took over a struggling program in the spring and you go to your first summer league game and you get your doors blown off by 30, 35, the kids are going to look at you and go, okay, what's it going to be like? And if you freak out, they're going to be like, oh, here we go again. We just stink. We're not, you know, that type of a deal. Whereas, okay, hey, we're going to do this. I like this, you know, whatever it may be. But your demeanor, how you present yourself in this whole situation, one of the big themes as I look at my list for today, Tony, things that you can control. Control the things that you can control. And the number one thing that I feel like you can control is yourself as the head coach and how you're going to conduct yourself, how you're going to carry yourself, how you're going to teach the game, all the above there. And I think for me, that's a big starting point as well.
Yeah, I think one of the things you probably go in with is you talk about the fact, you know, we've mentioned this before, let's get 1% better today. Mm-hmm. And in some situations, you might be able to get even a higher percentage than that better. But there are going to come those points in time where you might take one step forward and two steps back. Okay, so you go to a summer league, you get your door blown off, And you keep talking about it's all about the process. It's all about perspective. It's about the big picture. It's about improving in this, that, and the other. And the next thing you know, you're ranting and raving because of the fact that you got beat by 30 and they're like, okay, here we go again. And if you do what they've always done, you're going to get the same results that you've always gotten. But that's a very, very big time for you to keep your poise and composure. That's a very big time for you to go back and say, okay, here's what happened. Our effort, which we can always control, wasn't good. Our attitude, which we can always control again, wasn't great. And you go back and you highlight those things, those building blocks, those foundational pieces, what your program's about. You go back to that again, to the fundamentals, if you will, and you try to show them this is the path that we need to take. It's the more narrow path. It's the path that's not taken as often, but this is the path that we've got to take if we want to be competitive.
But you're also kind of going back to your first point, Tony, you're putting the identity out there. This is what it's going to look like for us to win and to win big. Here's how we're going to do it. And here's the plan, like you had talked about before. Here's the plan. We're not just making this up as we go along. We are building brick by brick by brick. And here's the direction that we want to take it.
Yeah. And it's a consistent day in, day out message. And that's what you have to go back to, because there's going to be those days where Murphy's Law is going to reign. Anything that can go wrong is going to. And how do you handle that? How do you respond when it does? Do you go back and are you like the previous 2, 3, 4 coaches that you know, said this, but their actions kind of made it hypocritical, if you will? Mm-hmm. Are you truly going to be the one who, you know, holds firm to that plan? And no matter what, you don't waver from it, even when it hits the fan.
Yep. What else you got up, buddy?
You know, another one I think you have to go back to is, you know, I mentioned the phrase earlier, big picture. And when you go back and hop into the situation, it might be, hey, our high school program, there's not a lot of talent right now. Middle school, maybe there's some. Elementary, maybe there's some. And so you want to go back and you want to do some clinics and camps with the middle school and the elementary, because, you know, big picture wise, that might be where this thing can start to get some air underneath of its wings and take off a little bit. But you're going to have to go there and work with those kids. And then if you're going to be consistently good, it's not just, hey, we work with the youth for 2 or 3 years. No, you keep working with them the entire time, because if you do that, you can be a good program that's good on a consistent basis. It's not where you hop in there every once in a while. It's where you're there day in, day out, year in, year out, trying to help the program get its foundational pieces set so that it can become a program that traditionally year in, year out is a high quality program.
Mm-hmm. I had essentially those two things on my list, Tony. I'm going to combine them into one here. I had the same thing, pouring into your youth program, and you covered that awesomely. So I'm not even going to try and say anything more per se on that. What I wanted to build upon on your point, you're coming in, and I actually had this conversation with a coach this week. You're inheriting a situation where your older kids have struggled. You need to try and build those relationships with those, you know, mainly your juniors and seniors that are going to be there for a short amount of time, relatively speaking. And yes, you want to make them the best players you can be. You want to be transformational as a coach, et cetera, et cetera. I'm not negating any of that. But my biggest point, or my bigger point, would be one of the big things that you do with those juniors and seniors is you get them excited about the program and what you're trying to do and how you're trying to build it, so that they will vouch for you with the younger kids, the freshmen, the 8th graders, the 7th graders, all the way down the line. And my little brother's in 7th grade, and he's excited to come to open gyms now. Coach Viss is great. This is, you know, this is a breath of fresh air for the program. And if you can, again, you're not going to change a ton of, you're going to change some habits, but you're not going to take a kid that's averaging 3 points a game as a junior and make them into a 20-point all-stater in that one summer, in that transitionary period. That's probably not going to happen. I shouldn't say it isn't going to happen, but it's probably not going to happen. But what you can do to build the program for the long term is to get those older players, those juniors and seniors, to vouch for you, that they believe in you. You know, I wish Coach Viss would have been here when I was in eighth grade. I really feel like, you know, my senior year, we would have really taken off. You know, those are the type of statements that you want to have coming out of your upperclassmen to help build your youth program, to give it some credibility so that those young players have something to look forward to. I think I made sense with that, Tony.
Definitely made sense with it, because, you know, you can't just take them for granted. They're going to be some of the best salespeople in your program, because mm-hmm. like you said, you know, at those open gyms and clinics and camps and so on and so forth, hey, you know, this guy's the real deal. Came in, has been consistent the entire time. It's a breath of fresh air. We're working on things that we need to work on. It's a lot of fun. I mean, those are your best salespeople early on for you. And if you can get them in your corner into, you know, get out there and to provide those promotionals, those testimonials, if you will.
Yeah.
That works really, really well.
Yep. Yep. Excuse me. What else you got, buddy?
You know, some other things to kind of keep in mind too is it's not just about changing the personnel and improving their fundamentals. It's also about giving them a great game day experience. And I think if you want to get the community involved, get your school community involved, you got to do some stuff. You know, for example, whiteouts, throwback nights, Hawaiian out, whatever the case may be, but make it fun. Do some things at halftime. Maybe if they make a layup, a free throw, and a three-pointer within 25 seconds or whatever, they get a free pizza. But have some of those things in place where that game day experience is something that the student body talks about and they want to be there. It's you know, must see action in person, if you will. The other thing to kind of keep in mind that goes along with that as well, you know, I mentioned earlier, it's bigger than basketball as far as what your program is going to be about. So maybe you're going to give back to the community. Maybe you get involved in the local food pantry, or you go serve a meal during the Thanksgiving holiday or whatever the case may be, but you do some of that charity work. And I think being visible in the community, at area businesses and different volunteer opportunities, I think that also changes people's perspective about your program. Hey, they're not just about wins and losses. They're not just about, you know, X and O's. They're about making better people and giving back to the community and making it a great experience for our student body, putting a product out there that they can be proud about. I think that's also steps that need to be taken there as well, if you're going to energize the fan base and the community, if you will.
I think the one of the best compliments that you can get about being a head coach and the program that you're trying to build is when your season is over, nobody wants it to end. You know, and I think when you're talking about theme nights, when you're talking about the feeling that you want to have around that program, ultimately that's what you want to have when you go into that locker room when eventually your season is over. And depending on your state, there's only a few teams that are really happy at the end of the year. Only a few teams went in their season with a win. So even when you are devastated by it, and hopefully you're devastated by it, instead of everybody, you know, 1-2 Cancun, people are legitimately emotional and hurt that the experience is over. And I think that's what you want to aim at. And you've got to build those steps, like you said, having fun, bringing those things out there. One of the things that I wrote down on my list, Tony, was gear, you know, making that out there. You know, cheap t-shirts are something that you can do and hand them out at games, you know, that type of thing. You want people to feel, when it comes to like gear and things like this, this is what you want them to feel like, Tony.
I gotta find a way to work this out. I love that apartment. It's so cozy. I'm ensconced in velvet. You know, if it was socially accepted, I know you would drape yourself in velvet.
And you want to drape yourself in the gear of your program, Tony. So I actually wrote on my sheet, ensconce yourself in gear. But you're wearing the gear all the time. You're giving it away. you know, I know like Jim Weeks, who was at Beatrice, he's now at Auburn here in Nebraska. He got free ice cream cone coupons from Dairy Queen. And if he was driving around town, he saw a kid shooting in their driveway, he would jump out of the car and give him a free Dairy Queen coupon. You know, different things like that to get that excitement going. And Dairy Queen will do that because they think, okay, if the kid will come in for the free ice cream cone, mom and dad are going to get ice cream and we're going to be out ahead of it at the end if we give away a little, you know. So I think those are all things, Tony, that you're talking about there that are kind of, you know, you've got to, one of the big things you got to do is be able to think outside of the box a little bit, right?
Yeah, you have to do some things that if you want different results than what you have been getting, you've got to do something different. You have to have some uncommon things a part of that if you want different results. And so I would agree with that. I think that's a great idea to drive around, whether it's tees for threes or, you know, cones or a player of the game or whatever the thing may be. You just got to do something to kind of jazz and breathe some life into it.
Mm-hmm. Kind of along those same lines, Tony, one of the things that I wrote down was visiting with influential people. Who are the influential people within your community? And within every community, some people are more influential than others. And I believe that, now you can't be fake. I don't want it to be fake. I can't be fake. I can't do the political thing per se. And maybe that's one of my failings as a coach is, maybe there were times where I did not play the political game as well as I could have, but I also wanted to be credible to everybody, just not a few people. So it's that art of coaching. It's that fine line of, hey, Bob Smith, I know you run the local construction company. Would you be willing to help us out? Yeah, I know you got a couple grade school kids. I'm not promising you anything when they're, you know, 6 years from now when they're juniors, if they're going to start or not, but can you help the program out a little bit? And you want to visit with those people. You want to create relationships with those people, but you also have to be genuine. You can't, to me, I think if you're fake to gain the favor of one person, but you lose the favor of many because of this one relationship, then it's not worth it, in my mind, Tony. But I think it is important to find who those people are. Hey, what can we do within the program? Do you have any ideas? How can you support the program? Is there any way we can get your support? What are some ways that we can work together to get this moving in the right direction?
I think that's important to get out there and, you know, talk to the powers that be, if you will. And like you said, be genuine. You know, there's no promises of playing time or favors or this, that, and the other. But I think getting out there and getting some feedback from the clientele, so to speak, if you will, that's a smart move.
Mm-hmm. I got two more things. What do you got, bud?
Yeah, the next thing I would do, you know, in this day and age, I mean, it's about technology, it's about social media, and you're going to want to make sure that that's a strength of yours. You know, that's just something as a world that we live in. It's very, very influential to that. If you can get some hype videos, you know, people have those game boards, if you will. You can play those hype videos. You can do some stuff behind the scenes, if you will, where maybe you have some of the younger kids come in and listen to a pregame talk, or maybe they come to the locker room after a game that, you know, just see what it's like in the locker room afterwards or whatever the case may be. But let some of those people have a little bit in your journey. And then on social media, you can do some other things too, as far as like player profiles and just updates, what the team's doing and stuff like that. And, you know, you can always put, you know, some game previews, some quotes and different things like that, and just put those out there as well. But if you can get a good social media blitz going, that may also, hey, look at this. This is really cool. This hype video that they have out there. And again, it's little things like that that might be that thing that catches the attention of these middle school and elementary players that are going to be in the future. And like, hey, I can't wait till that's me type of deal.
Mm-hmm. When I took over at Fort Calhoun, it was at the height of the pandemic. I mean, it was May, June, everything was shut down. And so we had no way of really communicating with the players face to face. And so I had to use Twitter to make that communication level the way that I wanted it. You know, this is what we're going to stand for. Eventually, at some point when we get in the gym, when restrictions start to fade away and hopefully we start turning a corner as a society, this is what we plan on doing. And I couldn't do it face-to-face. You could only do so many Zoom calls, but it was just a daily, okay, here's this, here's this, here's this, here's the bricks that we are going to build this with. And without a doubt, that was something that I really, really emphasized and I wanted to use to help get people excited about the program and to get them juiced to that. Hopefully when we get, again, when restrictions start to lift, and obviously eventually they did, let's create some enthusiasm. Let's go out. Let's get better. And let's do that there. So wholeheartedly agree. If you don't have a social media presence in this day and age, it's going to be your life is, the journey is much more difficult without a social media presence within your program. And you don't have to do it, right, Tony? You can have an assistant coach do it, somebody else, but it's I don't want to say it's impossible because it's not impossible, but you're making your life easier if you've got a strong social media influence out there within your program.
It's something that they want to see. It's something they want to be a part of, and it's a necessary thing.
Mm-hmm. One of the last things that I have, Tony, is to support other programs, to be a presence within the community, to go, if you're the girls, you know, whatever coach you are, go to the football games, volleyball games. Don't forget about the fine arts stuff. Go to the fall musical, go to the swing choir show. It's an hour out of your time, but people notice that stuff. And, you know, I always tried to be as supportive as I could be with other programs within the schools that I was at. And I think that's a way to show that you're just not here and committed to just your program. You're here and committed to the school as a whole, and that you want to be about the transformative process of the entire institution. And so I think if you could go out and support other programs, Tony, I think that helps in the process of, well, creating energy for your own program. Hopefully now the softball kids, the football kids, they come out to your games. They get excited for your stuff as well.
Yeah, it's kind of like that. Our mascot is the Cougars, so it's kind of like Cougars supporting Cougars. And I think it's a deal, too, where if you are trying to develop your program in excellence, and you want to get out there and support others, because that whole tradition and stuff that goes along with it, tradition never graduates. And so you're trying to emphasize excellence throughout the school. And I think if you can do that, that only is going to help your program as well. But also, I think it's important. I mean, you can't sit there and expect them to come and support you, but it's not a two-way street. You have to be there as well supporting them.
Mm-hmm. What do you got left, buddy? I got one thing.
Yeah, I got a couple here left. The one thing I would go with, I mean, we've talked about a lot of things to kind of build energy and stuff. And some of those things have been, I honestly describe them as fluff. They're necessary, don't get me wrong. But the thing you have to understand is that you're there for the basketball job. So when you're in the gym, you want to have high energy practices. When you are setting up your program, you want to provide leadership roles for everybody, not just a few. You know, I like that one pod that we did where we kind of went through and talked about the different areas of leadership and how you could plug two or three players in all of that. That way, the leadership of the program doesn't fall on maybe just your shoulders and one or two other people. It's something that you can, you know, divvy up for everybody. But I think those are things that we have to understand, is the fact that, you know, these other things are great. You want to make sure you support other programs. You want to make sure that you've got a presence on social media and stuff like that. But when it all comes down to it, and it boils down to it, you are there to do the basketball job. So you want to make sure you do the best job you can, have high energy practices, make sure you're divvying up leadership responsibilities. Everybody feels bought in and different things like that. So make sure that those things that really, really matter are those things that are at the top of your priority list.
Yeah, you got to do the job. You got to do the job, and you got to be organized. You, like we had talked about earlier, if you're creating energy, if you want to create that identity, if you want those juniors and seniors to vouch to the younger kids about who you are, you've got to bring the teaching aspect of it. You've got to be technically sound in what you do. You've got to build it step by step by step by step. And so wholeheartedly agree with you there, Tony. We could talk about all these other things. You can go to all the softball games. You can do this, you can do that. But you've got to, as my old student Noah Wolf would say, you got to bring the heat when you're in the gym as well. You've got to do your job as well. So the last thing that I had was regardless of the outcome, regardless of what's going on, you're trying to create energy. And we kind of referred to this earlier, Tony. There's going to be steps backwards. There's going to be bad days. At the beginning, there might be more bad days than good days. But you've got to find the silver lining. You've got to find, as you said earlier, Tony, you've got to find that, how did we get 1% better today with what we do? And you referenced it earlier, if you lose and you're talking about the process and then you're hooting, hollering, screaming, yelling, et cetera, then you're throwing off the process yourself. You're not controlling what you can control. And so, and sometimes you have to pre-think, hey, we're going into this game. It's the second game of the year and we're playing the number one team in the state. We won 5 games last year. Let's be honest, you're probably not going to win that game, and it probably won't even be competitive. So even before that game, you've got to be thinking about how you're going to find silver linings with the process of where you're trying to reach. What are you looking for that you could pick out to keep that proverbial ball rolling down the hill and keep everything moving in the best direction that you possibly can? So finding that silver lining, regardless of the outcome, I think is another big thing that you have to do to create that new energy within your program.
Yeah, it might be, we really got to dig deep, but you can find something. You know, you can go back and talk about the fact that as you look at that situation, did you compete hard and play your best the entire 32 minutes, regardless of what the scoreboard says? Mm-hmm. If you did that, you know, and there's going to be moments where you're going to play really well. Maybe there was a 5-minute stretch where it was even basketball, or you outscored them by 2, or they outscored you by 4, whatever. But highlight that. Find those things. You might have to dig deep, but you can find those positives to go back and to share with your team, hey, we are getting better, and here's why, and provide that empirical pieces of evidence for them. Mm-hmm.
Coaching today is, let's be honest, it's harder than it ever has been. And the demands on us, the things that coaches are asked to do, the lengths that we are supposed to go to be the best coach that we can be, it's becoming more and more difficult. A lot of coaches come into their coaching career and they feel really, really good about their X's and O's knowledge, the technical aspects of the game. And I was very much the same way. That's what I thought coaching was all about. But it's so much more than that. It's about being, especially at the high school level, and you can say the same thing at the college level or even the professional level, it's about being the CEO of your program. Folks, I think I've put together maybe the best thing I've ever done, and that is my third book coming out here this fall, 365 Days of Hoops, a 1-year guide to becoming a basketball CEO. And what I was able to do was to put together 365 separate concepts of what it takes to become a basketball CEO of your program. This is all divided into basically 10 different areas: book studies, coach studies, X's and O's. So you gotta know what the 2-3 zone defense is all about, zone sets, defensive tenets, whatever that may be. Culture, building a great culture at your program. Your game day execution. What are you doing on a game day on a daily basis when you're going into competitions? Skill development, personal development, finding time for you, taking a vacation, handling failure, creating your resume, practice, how to build a great practice, how to become a great practice coach, off-season workout ideas, and miscellaneous coaching topics. 365 Days of Hoops has those 10 topics subdivided into 365 different things that you need to do as a basketball coach. At the end of every page, there is space to journal, to write, to X's and O, everything that you need to do to take that topic, to think about it, and to think about what you are going to do. This is going to be available early this fall. Don't have an exact date yet, but I wanted to put that out there for you coaches so that you know what's coming out here. It's going to be a really, really good thing for you. One thought a day, take 3 to 5 minutes every day to think about it. And by the time you're done with this book, you are going to be really, really be prepared to be a basketball CEO of your program. So keep your eye out on it 365 Days Hoops, a one-year guide to becoming a basketball CEO, coming this fall from a pen and a napkin. Well, Tony, you know who's always getting better all the time.
Europe.
Tony, I've got a trivia question for you here. I think it's kind of difficult, but I don't think it's so difficult that you can't get it. I think if I give you enough help, I think you can get it. All right?
Sweet.
All right. So here we go. The basic question is, we had mentioned earlier that Fog Allen led Kansas to the 1952 national championship, right? Fog Allen was one of, I can't remember if it was 14 or 17 members of the original class of basketball Hall of Famers in the Naismith Hall of Fame. My question to you, Tony, in what year did the Naismith Hall of Fame open? Now, I'll give you a hint to get started on it. John F. Kennedy was not yet president.
So we are jumping past 1963.
No, he had not served as president yet.
Oh, so it was before he became president.
Correct.
Okay, my bad.
So I'll start you with that hint.
Okay, so I'm going to go 52.
Incorrect. Right decade.
Right decade. All right, so let's go 56.
Getting warmer. You have one guess left.
So I need to go later than 1956. So we're looking at 57, 58, or 59. Let's go with...
1 in 3 chance here.
Thank you.
I'm a math teacher on the side. I do math tutoring.
I'm probably going to... I'm screwing this up because I'm going to put it... So probably the one that's, let's go 59.
Yes, and it counts. Tony D. Viss from downtown, 1959. And you are correct.
Yeah, 1959. Okay, so see, that was kind of in that Goldilocks range with a little bit of help. We got you there. So some of the people that were inducted, James Naismith, Fog Allen, as I said, George Mikan, the original Boston Celtics, and I thought this was interesting, Tony. Ever heard of a guy named Amos Alonzo Stagg, the famous football coach?
More football.
Yeah, he was also the basketball coach at the University of Chicago, and he is in the Naismith Hall of Fame as a basketball coach as well. Yeah, so I bet when Mel Allen heard that for the first time, he said,
"How about that?"
So. How was that for a transition?
Oh, sorry. That was, that's a great segue.
Yeah, thank you, sir. Tony, we are wrapping up free agency. The headlines of it, obviously there's players out there that are still not signed, but the biggest difference makers, the biggest deals have been done for the most part. I asked you, and I have a list of 4 teams, 2 winners, 2 losers. You want to start with winners or losers, Tony?
I like the cup half full, so let's go with some winners.
All right. Who was your first winner of NBA free agency?
I'm going to go with the Houston Rockets.
Okay. What'd you like?
You know, the Durant move in itself was phenomenal, because if you go back and take a look, why did they get beat by Golden State? Well, simply they didn't have a closer, somebody to hit shots late. They're not a great outside shooting team, and Kevin Durant is that guy. Mm-hmm. I get he's older. He's going to eat up a good chunk of your cap space and all that stuff, but I think Kevin Durant was a great move there. Then you turn around and take a look at some of the other moves that they made as well. You know, they just kind of kept making home run move after home run move. One that I think that will be underrated is Dorian Finney-Smith, because they lost Dylan Brooks, and I think Dorian Finney-Smith slides into that role very well.
Yeah.
And then you go through and you take a look. I just think they made some really, really good moves in terms of kept Steven Adams. They brought in Clint Capella, which gives them more depth at the center position. But yeah, I just think Houston made home run move after home run move.
You take a look at their depth chart, and it's just going to be a bloodbath in practice. Adams, Sengun, Jabari Smith, Clint Capella, Durant, Tari Eason, Amen Thompson, Reed Shepard, who they drafted third last year and basically hardly played him, Fran VanVleet, a solid veteran. I mean, this team is really, really set up to do some really, really they basically traded Cam Whitmore, I believe it was, to Washington just because, hey, you're a really good player. We just have no room for you. And so they had a really, really good offseason so far. And they're in a good place. They're in a really, really good place, because I think they'll sign Durant for another year or two. By the time Amen Thompson and Sengun really start to get into the big money, Steven Adams and Durant will be gone. Van Vliet will be gone. And, you know, they're kind of set up for the next, in theory, Tony. Now, we said the Celtics were going to go on a 5-year run. And, they are no longer in that conversation, just less than 12 months later, you know. So, but they're in a good place. So I really liked Atlanta's offseason so far. I think they've done a really good job trading for Porzingis. I think has been really good. They traded for Porzingis. They signed Nikhil Alexander-Walker. They signed Luke Kennard. They moved out a couple of guys that they got the biggest coup. Perhaps the biggest coup is they have New Orleans' unprotected first round pick for next year. So that's a really big deal. Rishi Shea will be a second-year player, so you expect him to make a big jump. Jalen Johnson injured a lot last year. He'll be back. Dyson Daniels, a menace on defense. So this team has a lot of roster flexibility, some malleability with it. And I believe I was reading here, they're still $7.5 million under the luxury tax. So they still have a lot of room for moves to make here. So I really like what Atlanta's done. And now it's on Trae Young. Trae, are you ready to be the man on a winning team? And I think it's going to be a bit of a, what's the word I'm looking for? It's a fancy word. The judgment on Trae Young is coming over the next 12 months. There we go. I'm going to use that, Tony.
My other winner is Denver. Go through and take a look. With Denver trading Cam Johnson for Michael Porter Jr., Cam Johnson made, I think it was like $16, $17 million a year less than what Michael Porter Jr. did. And in the past, Denver had kind of been maybe a little bit unwilling to spend, and that cost them some of their key pieces. But they took that and turned it into some more pieces with that. They ended up trading Dario Saric for Jonas Valanciunas. Yep. Now, if Valanciunas plays there is yet to be seen. It's talked that he may end up going back to Greece, but we'll see what happens on that. And then the other thing that we saw as well, they went out and got Tim Hardaway Jr.
Yep.
That was a really nice pickup for them as well. And Bruce Brown.
Bruce Brown. Back. Yep.
And that's very underrated, because I think Bruce being out there kind of on his own, whether it was Indiana or Toronto, showed that he can't really do it on his own. But if you put him with a good player like Jokic, he can be a good complementary piece. And so those three guys that I mentioned, that was the other $16, $17 million that was a part of the Michael Porter Jr. money. And they put that into three nice pieces. And so I think Denver and Houston will be right there to challenge OKC for Western Conference supremacy.
Agreed. That was the other team on my list, Tony, was Denver. Kind of ironically, as Alanis Morissette would say, the butting of heads between Michael Malone and Calvin Booth was Malone wanted veterans, Booth wanted to play the young guys, and they they both get fired, and now what do? They get three older players to fill in around. He's still the best player in the world, in my opinion. Yes. Especially when you look at him taking that team to a seventh game against Oklahoma City. That just solidifies the argument that he is still. I know SGA was the MVP. I'm not saying he's not awesome. He is awesome. But Jokic is the best individual player in the world that makes other people better around him. And Bruce Brown, as you were talking about, Tony, he is the best case for that. Two or three years ago when they won the title, he looked like LeBron James playing off of Jokic. And then he goes to Toronto and Indiana and maybe Brooklyn. I forget where all the stops that he had. And he didn't look the same way. Was not in as much demand. And Bruce Brown, to his credit, said, my life was a lot easier when I was playing with that big Serbian dude. I think I'm going to go play with him again. So I really like their moves as well. They get Daron Holmes. He was out all last year with an Achilles tear. Christian Braun, I think, will be better this year. And a lot of it with Denver also comes down to Jamal Murray and his health. If he's healthy and playing at a high level, I agree with you. Houston, Oklahoma City, Denver, that's three heavyweights that are just going to be throwing fists at the top of the Western Conference.
No doubt about it.
Yeah. Losers. I'll go first here, Tony, I guess. I can go first since you went first on the winners. I will take, and not for drama's sake, because I truly believe this, I don't think the Lakers had a very good offseason so far, Tony. I mean, you know, LeBron re-signs and takes the money. Luka, again, from the NBA podcast I listen to, he's of course in great shape, but it's July. Austin Reeves turns down money. It's going to be hard for them to keep all three of those guys together. They fail in a lot of ways of getting the type of center that they want. So they end up getting DeAndre Ayton. And if you're that talented and a team like Portland says, we're better off without you, that's a pretty big red flag, Tony. And when that's your kind of marquee, this is gonna fill our need where we need to, you know, this is our biggest need, and that's who we're filling it with. Now, again, talent-wise, he's a talented guy, but mentally, his effort, his concentration level, will he bring it at the level that he brought it when he was with Phoenix and Chris Paul was on him the entire time, all the time? So the Lakers, I think, have taken significant steps backwards based on what they've done and then what other quote-unquote contenders have done around them.
Yeah, I also have the Lakers down as one of my losers, but the biggest loser, in my opinion, and I don't think it's particularly close, would be the New Orleans Pelicans. The biggest reason I would give you as far as that goes is how they got fleeced when they ended up wanting Derek Queen so bad that they traded him, or traded for him, I should say, and ended up trading, the guy from Georgia anyway.
Yeah.
And gave an unprotected number one draft pick. I would have traded just the unprotected draft pick for that. And then they also got the other player. And I don't know. New Orleans, you turn around and take a look at some of the moves they made, CJ McCollum for Jordan Poole. I wouldn't do that in 100 years. I get that Jordan Poole is younger. I understand that. But I just don't think that Jordan Poole's the type of guy that's going to do well in New Orleans. I don't know. I kind of wonder who's running the ship there. I know it's Joe Dumars and his group there. But I don't see a plan that makes rhyme or reason or much sense to me.
Yeah, that was my other big loser as well. So great minds think alike, Tony. We nailed it there. All the above. And you are looking at, for next year, you know, New Orleans is pretty delusional if they think they're going to make a jump from where they are to a top four seed. If Zion Williamson stays healthy, yeah, they're going to be better, but they're not going to leapfrog eight teams. And you are giving away the opportunity at, is, you know, a slim chance, but a chance nonetheless, a better chance than most teams of this being a top 2, 3, 4 draft pick, if not the number one pick in a draft class that is absolutely loaded. And no matter what you, in my opinion, again, Jeremiah Fears and Derek Queen are much better at basketball than I ever was, but they're not the guys that are going to be coming in next year. And so I think this was a really short-sighted move. I think it could be something that they could be regretting for a very, very long time. What say you, my friend?
Yeah, I just, I don't know. I mean, I think Derek Queen is a nice player, but I don't see him fitting around Zion real well. And Fears, I think, could be a good player too, but they're not the foundational pieces. And giving up that unprotected first round draft pick, going with Jordan Poole, I think they're a mess, and I think that they're going to end up giving away a lottery pick. Mm-hmm.
Coaches have really enjoyed the opening tip newsletter that has been coming out from a pen and a napkin here for almost a year now. Every 2 weeks, on the 1st and the 15th of every month, you're going to get a newsletter with an article, a podcast, an extra a bonus podcast. You're going to get some coaching videos on there. You're going to get some book recommendations, a lot of different things that are coming out here with the opening tip newsletter. It's really driven towards a little bit more of a personal written form of what we do here at A Pen and a Napkin, which of course is to help coaches get better, to hone their craft. And so I use a lot of my own personal experiences. We use other people's personal experiences. We try to go into the lab with coaches. We try to get into the nuts and bolts, a little bit more of a visual compilation of things that we do here at A Pen and a Napkin. So if you haven't subscribed to the opening tip newsletter, you need to do so now. Go to Substack.com, find the opening tip newsletter and subscribe to it. Or if you find it on Twitter here, go to it, check it out, subscribe to it. It's going to be a really, really good thing for you to check out. So check out the opening tip newsletter on Substack from A Pen and a Napkin. Tony, let's go some quick hitters here. More WNBA expansion. We knew we were having Golden State in the league this year. And actually, for an expansion franchise, they're kind of throwing some punches here. They're above 500 almost halfway through the season here. So hats off to Golden State. We've got, is it Toronto next year coming into the league? So now they'll go to 14. And then the league announced over the last few days that three more, Portland, Chicago, Detroit, Cleveland, Philadelphia.
Philly.
Yeah. So five teams are going to come into the league within about a 5 or 6 year window. It's good to expand, but the lessons learned from the USFL and other professional leagues, sometimes you can expand too much. Is this the right business model, Tony, for the W to go down, or are they trying to move too quickly?
You know, I look at where they are. I mean, you have a box office sensation with Caitlin Clark. Paige Beckers has been as good as advertised, if not better. You had the two rookies from Washington that made the WNBA All-Star team. And I think you want to strike while the iron's hot. And there are a lot of really good players that aren't on WNBA rosters. Mm-hmm. And so I think expansion is the right move. But I look at you and where you're going with this in terms of, hey, Toronto, Portland, and the three other franchises that you mentioned, you're expanding six teams really, really rapidly. And are you going too quickly? I would have said, hey, let's add four rather than six. But at the same time, you can't, you know, scared money ain't going to make money.
Sure.
And so maybe that's their motto. I don't know.
And there's players coming. You know, like you said, Beckers is a rookie this year. Juju Watkins, you know, with modern medicine, there's a very good chance she will get close to, if not back to, where she was as an individual player. We got the Miles and Hidalgo, the backcourt tandem at Notre Dame. Now, I forget which one transferred, but I know one of them transferred. So there's some players that are coming down the pike that you can get excited about as well. And it's not just Caitlin. It's not just Paige. It's not just the teams that we have today. It's not just Asia Wilson. But yeah, I think the sweet spot might have been four, Tony. I think six might have been too many. But they've done the math. They know the business model. And obviously they feel comfortable with it, and that's what they're going to go with. So, Indiana winning the Commissioner's Cup without Caitlin Clark. Las Vegas they beat in the final?
Minnesota.
Yep. Minnesota. The Fever hanging in there. They're 9-9. Clark missing another game here today with, the soft tissue injuries. Just been a tough year for her to, you know, find her stride and to be that quote unquote face of the league. She's only played in 9 games. Now she's playing terrific when she's playing, but, it's just not, I don't think it's what they envisioned for her and what she envisioned for herself. If they have her with Sophie Cunningham and, Natasha Howard and, Lexi Hull, the additions that they've made, I really think this team is really clicking. But it was a good omen for them to go and win the Commissioner's Cup without her. And hopefully she's able to get this soft tissue injury bug out of her system so that the second half of her season, she can help the Fever really take off and make a run.
Well, it's been weird because I don't think she had missed a game maybe all the way back to her sophomore year in high school, and she's missed 10 this year. And, you know, like you said, the issues with the groin, the issues with the quad and stuff like that, it's been a little bit concerning that she's missed more games than she's played in this season. And it's been some good signs that they've won the Commissioner's Cup. They had beat Las Vegas for the first time since like 2019 or something like that. Mm-hmm. But the concern is you've lost to Los Angeles 2 times.
Yep.
And Los Angeles is a handful of games under 500. You've lost to them at home.
Yep.
And they've given away several games being up 8-10 points going into the fourth quarter, where the wheels have come off in the fourth quarter and they've been outscored by a significant margin, thinking specifically of the game against Golden State. Mm-hmm. When they have their stuff in a group, they're really tough. But they've got to figure out some things, and maybe learning to play without her is something that when she comes back and gets plugged in and hopefully gets 100% healthy again, they can really take off. But I know that she hasn't been practicing a whole lot. And so you wonder how close she's being able to be back out there again. But they are definitely a team to be reckoned with when they're right. But to me, the best team in the league is Minnesota.
Yeah, they are rolling like a river right now. I mean, they are 16-2. Nafisa Collier, she is so much fun to watch, Tony. She might be my favorite player in the league to watch. Yeah, I think she's just terrific personally, you know, and that's an easy pick, but they are playing awesome. Pretty decent upset, so to speak, that they beat the Lynx in that final. And not only did they beat them without Caitlin Clark, but they beat them by 15 in that final there, you know. So not only a surprise that they won, but a surprise by how they won. So not on the list, Tony, real quick. What did you think about Becky Hammon's comments about her team's lack of effort, lack of wherewithal, et cetera?
You know, I think Becky's been very, very frustrated with this group. You've seen it not just, you know, the most recent example, but there's been a few others before that. But, you know, she's came in, won the title her first 2 years, got to the semifinals last year. And I'm not trying to be whatever, but unless they make some moves, this team is probably looking at maybe qualifying for the playoffs, but I don't think they're getting out of the first round. So, I mean, she's pretty good. I mean, you got the pop stamp of approval. Mm-hmm. You know, you're a pretty good coach, but you can definitely see some frustration building.
Yeah, and their top four Asia Wilson has missed 3 games, but everybody else, you know, Lloyd, Gray, and Young have all started every single game. And the big move that they made was trading Kelsey Plum. And she's, you know, again, I don't think that the Sparks should be making any reservations for the finals, but they're playing at a much more respectable level than they have been the last couple of years. And that is without, I'm pretty sure, hold on, let me make sure.
Cameron Brink.
Cameron Brink has not played yet. So they're waiting for her to come back. So, you know, again, not every move that you make is going to be the perfect move or exactly what you need, but it, you know, it's, that wasn't on the list, but I thought I'd throw that out there. Tony, last but certainly not least, and perhaps the most important news that we have, Red Panda, get healthy soon. Yeah.
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 I got to see her perform live and she is super impressive. And then the other night when, wasn't very much into her routine when she fell off the unicycle and stuff, but she is an amazing performer. So yeah, I would 100% echo what you said about her getting back to full health and being out there entertaining thousands of people at halftime.
We see her between Nebraska and Creighton games. We probably see her once a year, and yeah, it's amazing what she does with those bowls, and she's able to flip it. Yeah, so you know, hopefully again. Thoughts and prayers with Red Panda, and hopefully she is back on the unicycle sooner rather than later. Tony, episode number 136 in the books, creating energy in the program. Tony, any parting words of wisdom?
Consistent, positive message, foundational pieces every day. Stick to it and be the same, you know, influential, positive person every single day.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to borrow one from you. What is going to be your identity? I love that you brought that up. I'm jealous that I didn't think of that. But what is your identity? What are you going to be all about? I think if you start with those two foundational pieces, I think you've got a chance to take your program somewhere. So episode 136 in the books. Hope you folks have enjoyed it. Hope you're enjoying the last of the Cowboys out there in the world officially now. Hope folks are enjoying it. I got some more stuff on the way here, so excited for that. If you're in the Omaha area, you need some work done on your car, go to Ruiz Auto Services and Exhaust, just south of 90th and Fort. Looking for a new-to-you automobile, all-American used cars and trucks, 144th and I-80. Tony, hopefully see you tomorrow, man.
Yeah, we'll look forward to seeing you in person. Been a day or two.
Yeah, it's been a minute. So hope coaches have enjoyed this. Hope everybody has enjoyed this. Coaches, as always, let's be sure to hone our craft one day at a time.